back to business before we know it. I don't want to be the Debbie Downer, but
you're gonna wear snow, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm not gonna say it.
I saw a pitcher from Leith, North Dakota, and I knew right away, just by the way he was standing, it was Captain Brian Niewen. Captain Niewen, good to have you here.
Thanks for having us on.
Ever felt like any of your men and women were in danger in Leith?
I don't think we felt like we were in danger. I think it was one of those cases where our presence wouldn't have been known there. Things could really went south pretty quick out there.
So just that very visual, because I saw the picture, you know, the guys in turnout gear, the numbers high. I mean, good numbers, you know, basically they knew you weren't going to put up with any nonsense.
You know, not just us. There was quite a few law enforcement agencies there. It was our agency. BCI was there. The Grant County Sheriff's Office obviously was there. It was their county that we were in. They had a couple surrounding counties, Mercer County, Stark County, that were also had a presence down there. So, I mean, there was a big showing of law enforcement just to have that presence right away. Let those protesters know that if it did get out of hand, that we were prepared to, you know, step in there if we had to.
So research goes into something like this, and we were talking about it on the break, and I think it can be made public, and if it can't, you know, don't say it. But there were more than just the neo-Nazis that you were worried about there.
Yeah, I think you know, both sides, there's been a history between the National Socialist Movement, which was there, which is that Jeff Shope organization, and also Unity North Dakota is affiliated with what's called the Anti-Racist Action Group. And, you know, there's been some issues across the United States between those groups where they've had demonstrations, protests, and some of them have turned violent. So, I mean, that's really the reason we were there, is to protect both sides, to allow them both to have that free speech to, you know, protest against each other.
So how much interaction do you do with them? Or do you just take it in and know when the right time to step in and say that's enough?
You know, the Grant County Sheriff, Steve Bay, was in contact with both sides that were there that day to try and get an idea of how many people were coming, what their points of contention were, to give them an idea where they could protest, kind of set some rules for them, and try to then, when they come, make them abide by those rules. So I think, you know, throughout the protest, some of the organizers were in contact with the sheriff that was on scene there, and, you know, went as best could be expected. Nobody got hurt, no property was damaged, and nobody got arrested. So, I mean, I think all in all, the people that were there did a great job with the protest. You know, they were able to get their point across, but they did it in a safe fashion.
How do you, as a person in charge of the men that were there that day, know when to pull the pin? Know when to say, okay, guys, go home?
It's basically law enforcement can regulate time, place, and manner when it comes to any type of protest. And we allowed them the time to protest to each other, and at some point in time, basically you're loitering at that point in time, so then you can be
placed
under arrest.
See, and that's my point. Do you get to walk up and say, okay, you had your say, go home?
Yep, you have to allow them to protest, give them an ample time to protest each other. We did that, and at that point in time, we told them it was time to go home. They were told beforehand what time that they could protest to, and at that time, basically most of the people left.
Sergeant Grable, you and the Minnesota State Patrol, you're no stranger to this as well. The RNC, I remember there was you know, there were some nasty events that happened in downtown Minneapolis, St. Paul at the same time.
Yes, that is correct. Back in 2008, there was a very large event going on there, and did keep a lot of different mobile field forces. The State Patrol especially put together a team for again, for riot control, crowd control, that type of thing. So it's something we've been able to maintain since then. We try to train every year with our troopers that are assigned to that division, and just if there's any type of events like that where we can be utilized, needed, or anything like that, we can respond and help out there, I guess.
I was there. I was down at, I wasn't in Leith, obviously, but I was down at the RNC in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and through the help of a friend, through Stan Stein, who's chairman of the Republican Party in North Dakota. By the way, great turnout for the benefit for his wife yesterday. I think it says a lot about all small towns, but, and I'm sure that the Steins thank everyone. But Stan helped me find a plug-in a phone jack and the type of things you need to be able to broadcast from. And when you were walking around down there, you could tell the homework and teamwork that went into building a secure site.
It was a very, very large animal altogether, because you had St. Paul PD, Minneapolis also had one put together, State Patrol, and a lot of assistance from outside agencies, I mean, came together. And this was, it was a large event. We knew it was coming a long time ahead of time, so I guess we'd been training for that summer to get ready for that.
Well, I think it goes to show the teamwork. Just like as Captain Niewen said, you know, Grant County taking some of the lead on this as well, how everybody works together on it. Guys, it's a different season. People are bringing some bales home now. You know, the boats and the pontoons and the jet skis are getting put away. You know, a lot of fall tillage, combining some big equipment's out there. Brian, you know, there's laws that pertain to a lot of this stuff, but then there's common sense that goes with it. How do you deal with the change of the season when fall harvest comes around like this?
You know, if you think about it, tomorrow actually the beet harvest starts. It's the full harvest starts on October 1st.
It always rains right before beet harvest.
You see the weather, it's going to be raining. So I think, you know, for the most part, people out in our rural areas are used to this equipment that's on the roadways. They're used to being able to recognize it and kind of know what to do. Sometimes it's some of those people from outside those rural areas that get into those rural areas, especially during hunting season and stuff, and maybe get a little impatient sometimes and try to maybe pass something when maybe they shouldn't be passing. Just give those farmers some time. A lot of times they'll try and pull over for you if you are behind them to let you get around them. One of the biggest things is, you know, most farmers now use a 5-axle or larger semi. And when they're pulling out of those fields fully loaded, it takes them a little time to get up to speed. So just be aware that as you're approaching some of that slow moving traffic, to be able to react to that before you get upon them.
And look for mud on the roads. I mean, you know, look for mud on the roads because, Jesse, it's going to happen, isn't it?
It does. It's just a way of life around here in the valley.
Yeah. I want to talk to you a little bit about what happens in your area. You know, because the pontoons are coming out, because the boats are coming out, a lot of people taking those to places maybe quite a ways away from their lake, and you're on roads that are winding, and, you know, everybody's out looking at the leaves at the same time. How do you deal with those issues?
That's exactly it. I mean, weekends are especially busy, even here in the lake country, yet, even though things are winding down. As you mentioned, a lot of people are starting to take these boats, these pontoons out, because they've had them in all season. All of a sudden, they haven't checked that trailer over. Maybe they've got some issues with lights, brake lights, all those types of things. So, again, give that a look over before you put the vehicle in movement, I guess, would help alleviate a lot of that.
The other thing I want to throw out to you is, and I heard the reports this morning, there's going to be some crackdowns all over the place when it comes to DUIs. There's another tone that's going to be set. And how you do that, how you enforce it, it appears that you're not trying to hide it at all, guys. It appears that you're just trying to get out ahead of it media-wise and say, look, you know, this is a zero-tolerance thing, and, you know, we're going hunting. That's the impression I got. And so when we get back, if you have any questions of these two officers, call. Welcome back to Trooper Talk here on News and Views. Captain Brian Niewind, Sergeant Jesse Grabo. Brian is with the North Dakota Highway Patrol. Jesse is a sergeant with the Minnesota State Patrol, and they're taking your questions. But before we get to some of them, Brian, you're sending out the message on the DUI that zero tolerance. You guys are all working collectively together, but you're going to get after it.
Yeah, you know, October is going to be a statewide program. I know I sent the news release out here for our local region, but the statewide program is starting in October. It's through the whole month. Extra overtime hours are being made available through the DOT to all the law enforcement agencies that are participating, which is, I believe, about 85% of the law enforcement agencies in the state will be working extra hours in October. And the goal is to, number one, deter people from drinking and driving by letting you know that we're going to be out there in full force. And number two, when we're out there, if there is somebody drinking and driving, we're going to find them and take them to jail.
And Minnesota State Patrol, same approach?
Same approach. And actually, we have a seatbelt enforcement campaign starting this Friday that will run for 2 weeks. So again, State Patrol and about 400 other agencies throughout Minnesota will be doing the click it or ticket thing again. So I want to make sure everybody's buckled up.
Have we, through attrition, change some of the seatbelt thing? I notice now that my kids aren't young anymore. I mean, you know, I've got a daughter that's 29, one that's 28, but they just instantly, it's buckle up. And for their kids now, it's even if they just hop in the pickup to drive up to the mailbox, it's buckle up. I mean, have we changed that just by age, or what do you see out there on the highways?
Well, I tell you what, the overall majority, when I'm out on patrol and I'm looking for these type of violations or just watching traffic in general, I think the majority of people are. But yet, through the crashes that we're seeing, these fatal crashes in particular, the overrepresentation of unbelted deaths in these things, especially out here in rural Minnesota, about 78% of them happen out in rural Minnesota on two-lane roadways. So again, we're missing the boat somewhere along the ways, because you look at these one-vehicle crashes, they run off the road, they roll, the person gets ejected. Even though the statistics are showing the majority of people, again, that the people that are rolling are not obviously wearing their seatbelts, because, again, they're getting tossed out.
And the tragic fatality we just had in the Lisbon area recently, that was, again, was an unseatbelted driver.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the same thing we notice here in North Dakota. About 60 to 70% of our fatal crashes involve somebody not wearing their seatbelt. Good majority of them are one vehicle rollover crashes, where if that person would have had their seatbelt on, they'd stay inside the vehicle where it's safe, probably walk away from the crash. You know, that seatbelt, it's like you said, when you get in the rural areas, I think there's a less of a chance where people actually wear it. And when you get on our interstate system and our local area, like the metropolitan area, I think there's more people wearing it. So we are missing the boat someplace. And, you know, it'd be nice if we could get people to wear their seatbelts when they're in those crashes. They can walk away and not suffer the consequences, which is, you know, basically leaving your family hanging because you passed away.
Sad deal. Let's get to Keith. Keith, you are on with the Troopers. Go ahead, Keith.
Morning, Joel.
Yeah.
I'm a school bus driver for the Moorhead School District. And I frequently have a problem where drivers go through the bus school bus stop arm. And I'd like Sergeant Graber to enlighten the public on proper procedure for stopping for a school bus. People don't know when to stop. They go through the yellow light. They treat the stop arm like a four-way stop. And could he talk a little bit about the fines associated with that?
Great job, Keith. I should have done that myself. I'm glad he called in.
Yeah, that's a great topic. I'd be glad to talk about that. Well, first of all, yeah, what Minnesota state law states that when either the red lights are flashing or that stop arm is displayed, again, all movement of traffic must stop. It's not treated like a four-way stop sign, you know, stop and go. Until those red lights are, you know, deactivated or that stop arm is put in again, then movement can start again. But again, when you do see the yellow, the amber lights flashing, that's letting you know that the red lights are coming out or the stop arm. So again, be ready to stop. I mean, essentially you should be treating those yellow amber lights as a stop light. So again,
what's the fines?
Fines are about $300 and go up from there. And
so it's serious.
It is very serious. And again, with children present, it'll enhance it from there. You can lose your license. You can look at some possible jail time too from there.
Have you ever and I'm not saying Keith, but somebody like Keith, have they ever called in Sergeant Grable and said, you know, this license plate number, because driving can be routine in many cases, and as is bus driving. Did they ever call in and say, this guy just constantly doesn't get the message? You know, at least go talk to him and tell him.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're very, active in that sense. I mean, we go after that. Anytime the school bus driver makes that report, I mean, they get us the vehicle description, the license plate, the description of the driver, too. They're really good at getting that information down and getting that to us so we can follow up on that.
North Dakota side, Brian, how does it work?
You know, same thing. I think once those amber lights come on, it's your duty to stop and remain stopped until those bus turns off all their lights. You know, the stop arm, the red lights are another indication that, it's time to stop. But when those amber lights come on, it is letting you know that the bus is coming to a stop, that they're going to be letting children off that bus, so you need to come to a stop. In North Dakota, again, if a bus driver gets a license plate for us, we're allowed to issue a citation to the registered owner of that vehicle. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll contact the registered owner, find out who is driving that vehicle, and we'll issue a citation to the driver. If the owner is not willing to give us who the driver is, the owner is going to get a citation for allowing that vehicle to be driven past a stopped school bus.
This came up the other day with a friend, and I didn't know the answer. He said, how often is a school bus driver themselves tested? How often, and what are they tested for? Do you know, Brian?
You know, in North Dakota, maybe similar to Minnesota, you have to have a school bus endorsement on your commercial driver's license. And it's no different than any other driver's license. Every 4 years, you have to go in and get that thing renewed. So it's the same process they would have for somebody that has a Class D just for a normal vehicle. I'm not sure if there's any additional test once you've received that license. But our agency does do annual training with the different school bus drivers within our area. Whether that's we used to do a program out in Jamestown where we had a course that they drove through.
Okay.
We also do some classroom instruction for them as well, just so they have some ongoing training. I know that a lot of the schools and some of the private companies do require their drivers to have ongoing training as they go throughout their career as a school bus driver.
Sergeant Grable on the Minnesota side?
Yeah, same thing. And another thing just to talk about stopping. State law states that you must give at least 20 feet between your vehicle and that school bus, 20 feet a minimum.
You don't know where the little Johnny or Jill's going to run, do you?
Well, that's just it. Again, school buses remain one of our safest modes of transportation. Minnesota, 10,000 trips each day. So again, you're less likely to be injured riding a school bus. But again, it's outside when the kids are getting on and off. Those are the danger zones.
I would not want to be that guy that Keith got his hands on if he caught him running by that. You know, those bus drivers are pretty protective.
They are
of those
passionate
passengers. So folks, when we come back, the phone lines are lit up. Don't give up your spot. The phone number is pretty simple. It's 1-800 1-800-880-5346. That's 1-800-880-5346. When we come back, we will still have Captain Brian Niewind, Sergeant Jesse Grable. Brian is with the North Dakota Highway Patrol. Jesse is with the Minnesota State Patrol. They'll take more questions right after this. Welcome back to News and Views, heard here on the News and Views Radio Network. I want to make sure you know who's in the house with us. That is Captain Brian Niewind with the North Dakota Highway Patrol and Sergeant Jesse Grable with the Minnesota State Patrol. They're taking your calls. Let's get to John. John, you're on with the troopers.
Yes, a question for both of them. I'm frequently on 94 in both states. When people really blow my doors off, what can I do? If I get a plate number and a vehicle description, is there a number I can call right from the car to alert someone to this?
Thank you, John.
I was going to say, what we have over in Minnesota, I just say if it's something that serious, I mean, where they're just blowing your doors off, I mean, like you see 100-plus, I mean, that's just dangerous for everybody out there. So I would say that would warrant an emergency. Call 911. It's going to go right to the dispatch, and they can get that information out to us as quickly as possible so we can get a trooper in place and hopefully stop that extreme speeder.
How about on the North Dakota
same
side?
Same thing. Just call 911 and let them know as much information as you can about that motorist that just drove by you. License plate's great. Type of vehicle, color of vehicle, you know, how many occupants is important too, because, you know, a lot of times there is more than one type of vehicle like that on the roadway, and it can get confusing for us sometimes when you say it's just a white pickup. Well, there's a lot of white pickups out there. So the more information you can get us, the better, because then we can actually find that specific vehicle and hopefully get them stopped.
I don't know vehicles. I don't know if it's an age thing, guys, but I don't know vehicles. They all kind of are starting to look alike to me. You know, you used to be able to tell a Chevy from a Buick, from a Ford, from a, you know what I'm getting at?
Right.
And now, you know, I was looking at my wife's car, and she used to have a Ford Edge, and now she's got, they all kind of, that model, they really don't look that differently. So how often do people get it wrong, Brian?
You know, I think it just depends. You know, I think Jesse and I can probably attest that, you know, we're out there on a day-to-day basis, so we have a pretty good idea what the types of vehicles are out there, so... You know, we're probably maybe a little more used to being able to determine what type of car it is.
Well, I can tell if they're selling Mary Kay, but yeah. I can't.
But again, that's the important thing. If there's, you know, like a sticker on the back window, anything that you can give us to kind of describe that vehicle so we can find the specific vehicle, the better.
You know, what I always look for is the auto, who sold it. You know, I always look for who sold it. And you always see a lot of different, you know, whether it was Muscatel Burns Ford or whether it was, you know, Gateway or, you know, whoever. There's always something that tells you a little something about it.
I think one thing people need to understand, too, if somebody's speeding and they go by them speeding, if we locate them and they're not speeding, we can't stop them. We have to find a violation to stop them for. So there might be times when you call somebody in and you say they're weaving, they're speeding, whatever it is. And once we find them, we follow them, we do not see a violation. We cannot stop them.
Yeah, but if you come up on their rear end, that might teach them a lesson a little bit too. And if Amy and I see a Bass Auto sign, it matters to us, doesn't it, AI? If we see Bass Auto,
yes, it does.
Exactly. So let's get to Ed. Ed, you are on News and Views. Go ahead, Ed.
Good morning. See, I noticed that Minnesota passed the primary seatbelt law, and they've noticed their traffic fatalities and injuries have decreased since they passed that. They've got a higher compliance of seatbelt use. I'm wondering why the trooper from North Dakota doesn't advocate when you ask him what we can do about seatbelts and say we need to pass a primary seatbelt law.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Captain?
No, I think, you know, studies have shown the states that do have a primary seatbelt law, their fatality rate for people that are not wearing a seatbelt has gone down. Their compliance has gone up. And I think it is something that, you know, our state has looked at. Our legislature has decided not to pass that law. I think our department this last legislative session was in support of a primary seatbelt law. I think, you know, all law enforcement agencies, including our own, are in support of trying to get a primary seatbelt law here in North Dakota. And I think if we did that, we would see that traffic fatality count drop with people not wearing seatbelts. I think overall we'd see our traffic fatality count drop. And I think it's an important thing to look at, and hopefully through our next legislative session, which is a year and a half away, that this can be looked at again, and hopefully, you know, it'll be at the tip of the iceberg, and maybe this will be the time when it gets passed.
I have to tell you, from serving, that the North Dakota State Patrol very much was advocates for a couple of things in my time there, and they didn't hide it. They knew it was unpopular with certain legislators, but they were advocates for a primary seatbelt law. And they also advocated for higher fines. They said our fines are ridiculous, that unless we get the fines to the point where they're a deterrent. Now, that didn't make them popular with legislators at a time that you're trying to get your agency funded. But yet they did it. You know, I remember watching Mitch Rumpel walk through the halls of the Capitol as a member of the Troopers Association doing some of this. And so, Ed, I get what you're getting at, and I'm sure Brian does as well, but I hope you keep in mind that while it didn't make them popular with everybody, they did do some of that. So for the first time in a long time, I've got some open phone lines here, 1-800-880-5346 or 237-5948. Let's get to Karen. Karen, you're on News and Views.
How much does it increase the safety of the trick-or-treating children to hand them a flashlight?
Interesting. Thanks, Karen.
Oh, yeah, for trick-or-treaters to have a flashlight, yeah, definitely, definitely encourage that because most kids are out after dark, and anything you can do to make yourself more visible and help the kids see along the way, great thing.
No, I think it is a good thing. I think you see now there's a lot of glow sticks and all kinds of different things that kind of light up those kids to make you the parent when you're out there. You know, when I grew up, I lived in a town where we didn't have street lights, so you were walking down a black street with probably black clothes on, and it probably wasn't the safest place to be, but...
Be the last of seven. Remember the old Air Force jackets? Remember those? Okay, remember the Air Force jackets with the fuzzy hoods and all that? JJ and I, we were the youngest of both big families, so our moms pulled up our Air Force jackets. They pulled the zippers up so you had that little tunnel to look out of. They said, there, you're Eskimos. Go trick-or-treating. I mean, and it was dark as get out there. This one goes to Sergeant Grable. If someone is pulled over on the side of the road texting, will you guys... or any other officers stop to see if everything is okay?
A lot of times we do. I mean, that takes up a lot of our time. But again, it's one of those things. We don't know if it's some type of motorist assist, or are they having a medical issue, or they broke down. And a lot of times it is people that are, just pull over to use their cell phone to text, to talk. And that's a great thing. But if you're on the freeways, please just look for that next off-ramp. Find that off-ramp to pull over. It's a little bit safer because, again, traffic is whizzing by you pretty quick out on the freeways.
I want to mention as well, if you join our text club at 35270, that's 35270, that's all you have to do is text that number in. If you want it specifically to go to me or to get my attention, you put Joel in the subject, and we'll find it there as well. Question comes in by text saying, what is a primary seatbelt law? That's my fault, Brian. I should have informed people what that was.
A primary seatbelt law means that you can be stopped for that violation and that violation alone. So if you're not wearing your seatbelt, an officer sees you not wearing your seatbelt, you can be stopped for that violation. In North Dakota, our seatbelt law is considered a secondary violation. So you have to be stopped for a traffic violation, speeding, running a stop sign, your taillights out, whatever else it is. And then the seatbelt law can be enforced after you've been stopped for another violation.
Another one. Are they planning any texting and driving enforcement campaigns in the Fargo region, Brian?
We have done actually some in the past here. We're starting to use like a unmarked vehicle, a high-profile vehicle that we can ride in. And we have in troopers out there that'll be kind of inconspicuous on some of the off-ramps, and we'll be radioing them if we see any texting violations.
Do you have the ability to force them to give you their cell phone so you can look at it by law?
We don't force them by law. We can't force them. A lot of times we ask them what they were doing, and for the most part, people are honest. That's the experience we've had so far.
How about on the Minnesota side?
Same thing, but if it gets to be a serious enough issue, we would request a warrant or something at that point and go through that process. And that's what we do in a lot of our crashes where it results in serious injuries and fatals. We're going to gather that information through that process.
Same on the North Dakota
side. Same on the North Dakota side. I think one of the crashes of real recently was the one that happened out here by the Kindred exit, and that individual was charged with manslaughter because of the speed, and also he was texting at the time of the crash. So it's something we look at when it's serious enough.
I want to throw in a couple other things that came in by text. It was Jeff Ulmer from Ellendale who won the Gatorade Award. He had 500 and some yards. Amy and I received a bunch of messages, so one from Fairmont, and he said, I think he ran it against us, but I think he was being facetious when it came to that. 400. Now, Brian, you played a little college ball. 410 yards a kid from Bismarck ran.
That's crazy. You know, I think the game I played in, maybe 200-some yards is a lot of yards for a running back to get. But, when you're talking 400 yards, it's a lot of running in one night.
And it wasn't like he's playing a bunch of pansies. I mean, South is Fargo South.
Yeah,
these
it was
kids
number one against
football.
Number three, wasn't it?
Right.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all I know is, wow. Let's get back to the phone lines. And, Tim, you're on News and Views. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, say if I'm on a highway and the posted speed limit is 65 and there's a semi ahead of me going 60, and for a brief time I have to go 75 to get around them, and you're underneath the bridge. Are you going to give me a ticket for going over the speed limit?
Thank you, Tim. Brian?
Yeah, I think it's going to depend upon the circumstances. You know, our officers use some great discretion when they're out there. I think, you know, if it's pretty apparent that, you know, you're passing somebody at a reasonable speed in a reasonable area, I think, you know, you probably get stopped, but you might get a warning for that violation. Now, if it's something that's kind of egregious, yeah, you're probably going to get a citation for it.
Jesse?
In Minnesota, you are allowed to speed when you pass on a, but it only applies to your regular two-lane roadways, meaning you only have one lane of traffic going each way. So that's only going to be on your 55-mile-an-hour and your 60-mile-an-hour roads. See, in Minnesota, on our two-lane roadways like that, you don't have anything over 60 miles an hour. The only time you're going to have anything faster than that is on, like, your divided highways. So it doesn't apply to those. It's only on your rural two-lane roadways. So, again, if it's a 55- or 60-mile-an-hour zone, technically you could go up to 10 miles an hour over that speed limit, but you must resume once passing that vehicle. And you can only do it in the places that it's safe to pass. It's a no-passing zone. Not on hills, not on curves, that type of thing.
I'm not saying that all of North Dakota is flat and straight. I get that. I've been on some pretty roads in North Dakota that aren't just section roads. But there is a difference between the two states when it comes. I can see why Minnesota has that. I mean, you can get where you have a small window to finally get around somebody. And so it would seem to me that common sense for your troopers would matter, Sergeant Grable.
Yeah, and we use a lot of that. Again, we've had that law, though, that I just talked about here for, well, 4 years, the same length of time we've had our primary seatbelt law. So again, it's one of those things I think we've used some real good common sense or due care in those situations too.
All right, they're here for a little while longer. 1-800-880-5346. Minnesota Twins have called a press conference at 2:30 today. In that press conference, this is Joel Heitkamp speculation. No one calls a press conference the day after the season ended to say, oh, by the way, Gardy's going to coach again next year. You issue a statement on that. So my guess is Ron Gardenhire's toast. It will be carried live on the Mike McFeely Show, and I've been wrong about these things before. Trust me. So we'll see. Guys, I want to get some of these text questions that come your way. Good Minnesota example of a two-lane highway hard to pass is Highway 34 between DL and Park Rapids. Sergeant Grable, I just drove it. He's right.
Notorious, yes.
Or she is right. I don't know who the person texting was. What are the rules for the road with combines with their head on, Captain Nguyen?
Farmers in North Dakota are exempt from all of our width restrictions, so they are allowed to drive down the highways with those headers on. We would encourage them, with the size of these headers on these combines, is to take them off and trailer them from field to field, but they're not required to.
And on the Minnesota side?
Yeah, same here. We are seeing a lot of guys using, you know, doing the trailering for distance, and that's
great. I think they do it more for time, though, than anything. It's so quick now, and the way they can attach and detach, it's just so easy. It's designed so well.
I think you're right.
Another one comes in. How about these livestock trucks going through Moorhead, Sergeant Grable?
Well, kind of depends on the route. I mean, if they got no business going through there, they can be held in violation of that for weight issues and things like that. So, again, we do deal with a number of them. Our commercial vehicle section does a great job of doing that. But if you see other issues, please report it.
All right, let's get back to the phone lines. Corey, you were on with the troopers. Go ahead, Corey.
Hey, guys. I was told once with a little utility trailer, if you can see the taillights of the pickup, you're all right. I was wondering if that's true, and if you pull a car trailer where it's a little longer, Does that law still in effect for a little longer trailer, or what's the deal there? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks, Corey.
In North Dakota, any trailer, doesn't matter if it's a narrow trailer, like a motorcycle trailer, a little utility trailer, or like a car trailer, they have to have lights and brake lights on that trailer. So it is a requirement. You'll have to hook those up. If they're not working, make sure you get them working before you head down the road. Obviously, if they're not working, you can see the taillights of the truck. That's a bonus, but you are required to have those working on a trailer.
Minnesota side?
Same here. And anything that sticks out beyond the length of the trailer, beyond 4 feet, beyond the back of your pickup or beyond the trailer, needs to be marked accordingly.
Okay. North Dakota side, if it sticks way out the
Again,
the
if, you're, if you're 4 feet past the end of a trailer, you're supposed to have a red flag on it or have some lights on the end of that, whatever it is.
Okay. Let's get back to David. David, you're on with the troopers.
Yes, I had a question. It may have already been asked, so I apologize. But and then I have a follow-up question to it. The seatbelt law and the texting, are there actual laws that so you're breaking a law if you are texting or not wearing a seatbelt in your vehicle in both states? Or how does that work?
Thank you, David.
North Dakota does have a law against texting while driving. We also have a seatbelt law that requires any front seat passenger in a vehicle to have a seatbelt on. Then we also have a separate law for children that are inside of a vehicle. So we do have a separate law for both of those. And so, yeah, there is laws on the books here for those violations. But specifically in North Dakota, it talks about our seatbelt laws being a secondary violation.
And the texting is a primary.
Texting is a primary.
And Jesse?
Minnesota, both are primary violations, texting and not wearing your seatbelt.
Now, just I want to make sure everybody remembers this. Secondary versus primary. If Captain Nguyen sees me without a seatbelt on, he can't stop me. If he picks me up for speeding and I don't have a seatbelt on, then he can fine me for not having the seatbelt on. That's the difference between primary and secondary. Now, I will venture this. If they find you without a seatbelt on and you cross that line, I got a fiver says you get stopped. Because you know what? You should be wearing a seatbelt, and that's probably the one way to enforce it. So know what that difference is. But I agree with the previous caller that the North Dakota legislature should bite the bullet and just make it a primary law if it sets that type of a tone. Both of you, I don't think you realize how much the public loves it when you do this. I'd love to be able to get every call in. It's not going to happen. It never does. Thank you, Sergeant Grable, for coming in.
Thanks for having
us. Captain Nguyen, thanks, and thanks great job down in Leith. Not an easy job to do. Let's go.